Well, we are very lucky this morning that Hugh Sykes is actually with us, not in either Afghanistan or Pakistan or some other place around the world, but here with us in studio and able to give us a better perspective on what exactly is going on in Afghanistan and Pakistan, especially as we begin the drawdown of troops. But I wanted to talk to you about one of the headlines this morning, that the American ambassador to Pakistan actually held an event supporting gay rights, which in Pakistan, you're wincing already. This did not go over all that well.
No, imagine the opposite. Imagine if the Pakistan ambassador to the United States came out in public and encouraged the anti-gay rights movement here. It's comparable.
So do you think that he was, I mean, was he acting alone? Was he going rogue? Or was this, did the D.C. know about this before? Any idea?
I hope they didn't, because I'd be shocked if they did and they approved of it. Because I really do think it's culturally insensitive. It's kind of, it's almost imperial. It's neo-imperial. I mean, whatever you feel about gay rights. And of course, there are gay rights in this country, in the United States. Yeah. Pakistan is a very different country. And a diplomat is supposed to be, well, diplomatic.
All right. Well, let's talk a little bit more about Pakistan before we head over the border into Afghanistan. You had an interview recently with Carl Eikenberry, who is the U.S. ambassador to Afghanistan. And you talked to them quite a bit about the Pakistan government and their cooperation with the U.S. And I wanted to play back this comment he made to you in terms of how good Pakistan is at going after insurgents that both they classify as threats to the state and those that they don't think are threats to the state. Here's what he said.
I believe that the notion that you can have snakes in your backyard and that some of the snakes bite your own children, but other snakes can be trained to only bite the neighbor's children is not necessarily a sound way ahead.
What does that tell us about the diplomatic approach to Pakistan?
Well, it is so hugely complicated because there are three Taliban. There is the Afghan Taliban, who have sanctuaries in Pakistan. There's the Haqqani Taliban network, which goes way back to 30 years ago. This was one of the original strongest, most vehemently dangerous Mujahideen movements, which was sponsored by the USA and by the British to fight holy jihad against the Soviet Union. And the third Taliban is the Pakistan Taliban, who are based in Pakistan, who attack Pakistani installations because they think that Pakistan is too much in bed with the United States. It's unbelievably complicated. And if you add to all that, the topography is incredibly important. To understand this, I think it's essential to look at a map. And if you look at the border that snakes down from China to the border between Pakistan and Iran, the Afghan-Pakistan border, it's not even agreed where the border exactly goes, but along that border there are mountains that range between 9,000 and 22,000 feet with deep valleys on either side. And all these different groups have got their bases in these mountains. And though the ambassador says that Pakistan ought to rein in some of these groups, the Haqqani and the Afghan Taliban, it is incredibly difficult for them to do so because the loyalties in those areas are much more tribe to tribe than tribe to Pakistan central government. Pakistan is not a centralized state. It's very fragmented. It is really difficult for Pakistan to do anything about tribes in the mountains who want to fight Americans, who they regard as occupiers of Afghanistan.
So it may not be as simple as just blaming Pakistan for not cooperating in the way that the U.S. wants them to.
Well,
do so.
But there's an element, because there are people inside Pakistan who believe that within the Pakistani intelligence service, the ISI, the Inter-Services Intelligence, they believe that within that organization, and also within the army, that there are people with an agenda, with an Islamic caliphate agenda, trying to manipulate the whole situation and turn it to the advantage of fundamentalist Muslims who want to begin a worldwide caliphate, starting off with the Islamic State of Pakistan, which is a nuclear state. Now, I think those allegations are hugely exaggerated, but I'm told from people I've been seeing in Pakistan in the past week that there are people like that, and that the government may turn a blind eye to what they're doing, not officially approve of what they're doing, but turn a blind eye to it. Again, that is incredibly complex and very hard to pin down exactly.
Well, let's go back over to Afghanistan, but since the drawing down of troops is going to begin relatively soon, you actually have been revisiting with certain people over a number of years. I wanted to play a couple comments from Turaj. He works at a bookstore. He's the subject of the book, The Bookstore of Kabul. First,
his father was the subject of that.
Right. This is a comment that he made back in 2008.
We don't need weapons. We don't need American soldiers. We need American teachers. We need American fighters. We have more than 50,000 international soldiers in Afghanistan. If they keep breaking people's heart, you will find an Osama bin Laden inside every house.
All right. Then after that comment, in the years that followed, the number of U.S. soldiers rose to 130,000. That was after the troop surge. And you met back up with him in 2009, and here's what he said.
I don't know what to do. This is so... This makes the people, you know, so sad. I have stopped thinking. I do not think anymore. There is nothing more to think about. We have already thought about this. And everything was totally against our expectation, you know.
And you just now visited with him again. What does he say now?
Well, if you can imagine him being even more depressed than he was there, he is. He's just in despair. He thinks that he wants American and, well, foreign international forces, but of course most of them are American. He wants them to stay because he doesn't think the job is done, and he's convinced that Afghanistan will collapse into civil war the moment they go in 2014. And so are a lot of other people there. It's a very anxious time. A lot of people believe that although there's been a huge military effort against the obvious enemy, the Taliban, there hasn't been nearly enough investment in people, as one man put it to me. As he said there, as Taraj said there, yeah. We don't need American soldiers. We need American scientists. Unless you build the foundations, well, this is the
why
argument.
Was he so depressed when the numbers rose to 130,000?
Well, he was not depressed by the numbers rising.
So what was it that was making him so sad with the commitment doubling, more than doubling in Afghanistan?
I think it's a slight misunderstanding of what he was saying. He wasn't sad that the commitment had doubled. He was sad that the... that what the soldiers were doing in Afghanistan, what the international forces were doing in Afghanistan, wasn't cementing progress, building real foundations, investing in people, investing in institutions, investing in... as many people have pointed out to me there are lots of schools that have been built, but many of the schools are insecure. The teacher-pupil ratio average in Afghanistan is one teacher for, wait for it, 80. 80
Holy cow.
Pupils. So you get these wonderful kind of spun statistics from departments of government in Britain and the United States saying we've built lots of schools, but they don't actually tell you the detail about how many kids go to those schools. They're enrolled in the schools, but do they go to school every day? How many hours do they go to school every day, etc.?
We're going to talk a little more with Hugh Sykes, reporter for our partner, the BBC. We're going to speak more about what's going on in Afghanistan in preparation for the drawdown after headlines. Stay with us.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.